Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now we're going to talk ice cream, because whether it's the distant tinkling of the Mr. Whippy van or a 99 dripping down your wrist, there is nothing more evocative of the sweet taste of summer than ice cream. But when it was invented, what's in it, and can you make it at home without any fancy equipment? Well, Agnes Boucher-Hayes, home economist and lecturer at the Technical University of the Shannon, is here with the scoop on ice cream, Agnes.
No puns there, Claire.
Yeah, pun absolutely intended. Will you run us through the history of ice cream, Agnes? Because it certainly started long before we had anything to store it in, like a freezer.
Absolutely. It was there well before the fridge. There are mentions of King Solomon looking for, he was very fond of ice drinks around harvest time. And also the Roman Emperor Nero Claudius Caesar, apparently he used to send people up into the mountains to bring down snow, and then he'd flavour it with fruit, as well as Alexander the Great. And then Marco Polo went around. There's records of it with the Tang Dynasty, and they used to, and that's probably where Marco Polo brought it back from. But they used to have a milk confection. So they would thicken the milk with flour, and then they'd put it into frozen lakes in metal tubes, and they would flavour it again. And really then, in the Arabic world as well, there were sherbets, and they came to Europe, and then the Italians took charge of ice cream, really, I suppose we can say, in Europe. And then they brought it to, in 1686, and a Sicilian opened a cafe in Paris, and he used to serve ice creams there as well, but it was more gelato. But they weren't like what we would have. So what the people used to do is they used to take ice, and they would have what were called ice caves, which were large holes dug in the ground, and they'd be able to store the ice there, which I find fascinating considering the warm temperatures, say, for example, the sherbets in the Arabic world, that, you know, that there would be these ice caves, and then you take the ice out and you'd use the ice then to freeze. But this was then kind of modernised in the 1800s. There was a lady called Agnes Marshall, and she wrote 4 books, and she's known as the Queen of Ices. And she developed the cornetto, or putting like the wafer cone. So she's credited with that in 1888. And what she designed was basically a bucket, and then she'd take the ice and she'd put salt into the ice, and that would drop the temperature. Then she had a zinc bucket within the wooden bucket on top of the ice, and she would churn her ingredients together, her custards and her flavours, and she'd make ice creams.
Clever.
Very clever. And And then if you had any left over, it would go back into the ice cave and you would have your different flavourings. So, I mean, very, very innovative. And in her book, she references that she would bring the ices from Norway, but also there was a lot of trade from Alaska that the ices would come over. And then in the 1900s, it became more prolific, and Ireland kind of got in on the game in the 1900s.
Okay, let's talk about the history of ice cream here then.
Oh, no. So Hazelbrook Farm is where it all started in Ireland in 1926 with 3 brothers. And they were in Rathfarnham, and they had an excess of cream. So they started making ice cream, and then that became more prolific. And then they would sell it up around Rathfarnham, and then they were bought by an American company. And then that American company was subsequently bought in the 1973 by Unilever. So Hazelbrook Farm was where it started. And in Ireland, people would have had ice cream in a tub. Rather, it wasn't until the 1940s that they started to eat ice cream on a stick. And what I found intriguing was, and I suppose it kind of tickled me pink, that in the 1970s, the Wibbly Wobbly Wonder was created. And the Wibbly Wobbly Wonder, the reason that that was created was, how can we make an ice cream, keep it the same size, reduce down the amount of cream in it, but yet the consumer still gets what they want? And there's jelly on top with a coating of chocolate, and then ice cream on the bottom. So
they have
the amount of cream.
Can you get those anymore? They were lovely,
weren't they? Loop the loops, wibbly wobbly wonders, brunches. They're the classics, Claire.
Absolutely. But you can get the loop the loop. You can get the brunch.
You can get versions of the Wibbly Wobbly Wonder. They're not as prolific as they were, and unfortunately, to my mind, when you taste them, the banana and the strawberry at the bottom don't taste quite
not
the same.
Not as nice.
Not quite the same, Claire. Not quite the same.
Now, we'll go back to basics again and maybe just talk us through what's in dairy ice cream.
Okay, so when we think of ice cream, we use it as a generic term. But when you look at it in a little bit more depth, ice cream is usually looked at as a creamy frozen dessert, and that's as much as we think. But now there's a lot more plant-based ice creams or frozen desserts around. So really there's dairy ice cream, which has to have a minimum of 5% fat, 5% fat is present in it, and 2.5% from milk, and 2.5% milk proteins has to be in ice cream. So you can have fat from vegetable in ice cream, but for dairy ice cream, the fat has to come from milk. Mm-hmm. That's really the difference.
That's the key to ice cream.
Yeah. So then with ice cream, you can have 2.5% milk proteins in it. So really, ice creams that we would use, you know, that we'd use coconut milks and plant-based milks, technically, and I'm saying technically in inverted commas, aren't what would be, you would qualify under ice cream because they don't have the 2.5% milk. However, you can get some fabulous frozen ice cream. I would call it ice cream. That are, you know, that is plant-based. Mm-hmm. So if you're a vegan, vegetarian, you don't have to miss out.
Okay. So you mentioned gelato earlier. Yeah. How does that differ from ice cream?
Yeah, this is quite interesting. The breakdown then, I suppose, you know, the subdivisions within it. Gelato would have less cream in it, but more whole milk. So that would be one distinction. But the mouthfeel would be slightly different. But it's the amount of whipping that would go into an ice cream versus a gelato. So there may be a third, and it's the speed at which the mixture is whipped would be one difference. So ice cream, as we would know it, would have a much faster whip, so you'd incorporate more air, and a gelato would be slower, and it would have less air, about 30% air, whereas ice cream can have up to 50% air present in it.
Okay.
So it's the whip that would go into it, and then you'd have a semifreddo.
Yes, which could be complicate things even further.
Yeah, which is a custard, and that doesn't have any whipping, so that has it's a custard based or a cream and or cream, and that doesn't have any whip in it at all. So that's just
heavier,
luscious.
Is it?
That is, yeah. That's way more dense, and it's not as you take it out of the freezer a little bit beforehand to allow it to so that you can cut through it. So yeah, so that's. The fat would keep it a little bit more, it would be quite dense, but it would be a little bit softer.
And
so semi-frozen.
Frozen yogurt then is something that I know is popular in the United States, and people have it here too, but maybe not as popular here as it is the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah, no, we don't seem to have as much of it. It isn't as prolific here as it is over in the States. But that again, it's just yogurt with flavourings added to it. It might have people may have the understanding that it wouldn't, you know, that it's less calorific value. However, you know, there are a lot of flavourings and sugars can be added into a frozen yogurt, the same as an ice cream. Other things are added into so that, like, you know, flavourings, emulsifiers, different things to stabilise it. But it would have it's a cream based again, and it's animal based. If you were looking for something that has a lower calorific value, you might look at a sherbet, which would have come from the Arabic world. Turkey would have a version of it, but there can be a little bit of milk or dairy in that. However, a sorbet is very simply, and a sherbet might have some eggs present in it, whereas a sorbet does not. Sorbet is frozen ice, frozen water and flavourings, really, and a bit of booze as well sometimes.
Yeah, but if you're going to have an ice cream, have an ice cream.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, would you agree?
I'm not going to disagree with you on that. I'm not. But the fun, you know, and get one that you like. There are so many different types of ice cream, and there's so many different flavours available. But what it's really interesting, it's quite a simple thing to make at home as well yourself without having the ice cream machine and a whole palaver. You know, if you do have an ice cream machine, you know, there are obviously recipes and things like that. But there are little shortcuts you can take as well. For example, if you were making an ice cream, if you were having a very posh dinner party or whatever and you were making your ice cream, you could actually use a shop bought custard, a ready-made custard, so you wouldn't have to go through all the steps to make the custard, and then you can add your flavourings. Or if you don't have an ice cream machine, you can get a can of condensed milk, you can add some cream to it, whip them all up together. So you get lots of, you know, with the balloon whisk or with your handheld whisk, and add in whatever flavouring you want. Put it into a tub and freeze it.
And it works, does
and
it?
And it works. It genuinely does work. I saw a lovely recipe, and this one was it had quite the Italian influence, and it had lovely kind of toffee dolce di leche in it. But you can use coffee, you can use anything at all in the whole wide earthly world that you'd like to try out. You can use, and that, and it does work. And it's just, you know, and then you allow it to cool, and then you take it out. And you can scoop it out into your cone, and Bob's your uncle.
Sounds delish. Now, yeah. I better ask you about the 99, because there's so many questions asked about this. It feels like every year. Where did the 99 come from?
Well, now, I'm going to say I really don't know. However, there are many theories as to where the 99 came from. One is that there were 99 guards, which were very special in the Italian king's army, so that anything that was particularly special became a 99. Another theory is the fact that a lot of the conscripts from the First World War were born in 1899, and that became a nod to them. But another theory is, they're all Italian, the ones that I've come across anyway, that there was a gentleman, and he opened a opened an ice cream shop on 99 in Scotland, in Portobello, and it was number 99 Portobello High Street. So he used to put the flake into the ice cream. He used to have it and put the flake into the ice cream, and that's where it became known from Scotland as the 99. So,
so many stories.
And I'm sure there are many, many more. So you can take your pick. I happen to like the 1890, the conscripts, because apparently the feathers and the plumes in their hat, you know, were, they looked a little bit like a 99 flake.
All right. So we can really take our pick from
the number of
explanations. Agnes, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Lovely to have you with us again. And we all want to have an ice cream now. And we probably will a little bit later on today. Agnes Boucher-Hayes there, home economist and lecturer at the Technical University of the Shannon. In the headlines today, workers at Tara Mines have voted to accept a deal which was brokered between the unions and the management. Now, the deal that has been agreed provides enhanced support for 650 workers who will be laid off temporarily from tomorrow. The new Director General of RTE, Kevin Backhurst, has condemned what he called one of the most shameful and damaging episodes in RTE's history over the payments and governance controversy at the broadcaster. And he's been speaking at the Public Accounts Committee, which is hearing from representatives from RTE as we speak, and no doubt there will be plenty more on that over the course of the day on RTE Radio 1. Ishka Aaron is warning of potential disruption to water supplies due to strike action by members of the Unite trade union. That's today and tomorrow. And the Central Statistics Office figures show that the annual rate of inflation has fallen further to 6.1% in June. That's down from 6.6% in the 12 months to the end of May. If you missed anything on the programme, if there's something you'd like to go back and listen to again, and the first thing that pops into my head is the wonderful singing we heard from Crea today on two occasions on the programme, you can go to the RTE radio app and everything is available there for you. I'm heading away. I'm taking a summer break, but the hardworking team will be soldiering on, and Philip Boucher-Hayes will be ably sitting in this chair over the next little while. Thank you very much for listening. You can catch up, as I said, on anything you might have missed on the app. That's the RTE radio app. The programme was produced today by Tom Donnelly, research by Kieran Dunn, our broadcast coordinator, Louise Kerr-Ross. Jamie Doyle was on sound, and it's over now to Louise.